Okay, does anybody need lesson number 5? We're going to finish it up today. Okay.
I just have to share. I'm bad girl. I brought the map, so I
bring it. That's good. I'll pass it down. I'll give you. You what? Morning. Lesson number 5. I've got number 4. Did I give you number 4?
Yes, you want 4?
Yeah, I got 4 too.
I thought they were mixed up with 5, so I just now noticed that. I'll see if I got 5 up here. All right. Well, must have run out of 5. Oh, maybe make you know, 5 or 6 or something like that. We don't need.
I saw the Comingas twice in a week, and I didn't remind me to bring a tripod. I found mine.
Well, I think I've got mine to where it'll probably work. Okay, lesson number 5. Finish up the questions we did not look at last week and the discussion that we didn't look at last week. This is concerning the first miracle and the cleansing of the temple. Jesus, as found in John, the 2nd chapter. I didn't move the whiteboard around, because I'm not going to do anything other than what's already there. But we've been putting the parallel scriptures for each lesson up here. And lesson 5 is over here on the right. John, the 2nd chapter. If you look at the harmony of the gospel sheets that we passed out, you'll see that on the first page, it has the marriage feast, cleansing of the temple over here. Lesson 6, which we will hand out today, or did we hand out lesson 6 last week too? I think we did, didn't we? If not, we'll hand it out again. Lesson 6 has chapter 3 of John through the 2nd verse of John. There's kind of a typo if you're looking at it, but don't necessary. If you have the parallel or the harmony of the Gospels, that's what it's called. It says Nicodemus comes to Jesus by night, John 3, verse 1 through 21, and then Christ and John baptizing, John 3, verse 22. And it should be, instead of a semicolon there, John 3, verse 22 through chapter 4, verse 2. So that's a typo that these people made on this sheet, but maybe that won't throw you off. We have it up here on the whiteboard. And Brian, did you get those lesson 5? Oh, okay. This lesson 5 has daily Bible readings as each one of them has at the top of the page, middle. And the first two things are Jesus works his first miracle and Jesus cleanses the temple. And then it has some extra passages in there, a psalm about Christ in Psalm 69, the Passover feast, Exodus the 11th chapter, and the temple tax, Exodus the 20th chapter, Numbers chapter 31. And Jesus cleanses the temple again, Matthew 21, 12 through 17. And an evil generation asks for a sign, Matthew 12. I'm not going to look at that second cleansing of the temple. We mentioned it a little bit last week, but that's getting ahead of our chronological study. And I'm not going to talk about the Psalms about Christ and the Passover feast and the temple tax. The temple tax we talked about just a little bit as to what were the people doing, changing their money and so on. So, anyway, we went through the questions for review and had a few discussions and so forth. So we're looking at the questions for thought today in Lesson 5. Does everybody have a copy? Brian's got some extra ones here now. Lesson 5, the first miracle, and Jesus cleanses a temple. Thanks, Brian. I didn't hand out Lesson 6 last week during class time, but after we, after our worship, I put them on the table back there. The announcements were made to pick up one. We'll hand these out to those of you that didn't get one last week. We're not going to probably get to Lesson 6 today. In this survey, we're not studying each passage verse by verse or anything like that. We do need to read them, of course, if we haven't read them before. But we'll not always do that in class. And so Lesson 5, questions for thought, usually stirs up some thought and discussion with us. And number one says, how does Jesus' response to Mary in Cana reflect upon the religious practice of Mariolatry? We talked about just briefly what that was last week. And anybody tell me what in the world that Mariolatry means? Okay, I saw your hand first. Olatry, okay. Mo? Yes. Yeah. This is not Mariology, but this is Mariolatry. Mo. Paying homage to Mary. I guess, I can't say their rosary, but when they're saying their rosary, they use that term, don't they? Hail Mary, Mother of Jesus. Etc. Etc. Word. Mother influenced son. Okay. All right, and we'll get back to the miracle that this question comes from in a second. Mary? What does she mean by my Mary's coming? Oh, coming for her garden. I thought you. Oh, I thought you said she was in her garden already. So. Okay. Yeah, there's a lot of practices that, like that in Catholicism. The St. Christopher's medal, as they call it, you hang that on your rearview mirror, so that he's the one that protects you on your travels. It's the same idea. In the miracle that Jesus performed at the wedding in Cana, when they ran out of wine, then Mary said something to Jesus, and what was it? Okay, they're out of wine. But what was the rest of it? Whatever he tells you to do, do it. So, as I think Ward was indicating in the previous comment, because she was, she instructed these people to do whatever Jesus told them, then it's kind of like, you know, I've got control over him, maybe. Maybe not. But anyway, that's where it comes from. And we'll say more about not that specific thing, but in our lesson this morning on essence of worship, we'll show that that is not what the New Testament teaches. Ward, go ahead. I remember you mentioned that, and I forgot to look it up, and I don't recall in the 50s, I don't know whether I was paying much attention to what was going on in Catholicism. But. So, yes, many of their doctrines, many of their practices are not all that old. Some of them are, of course, but some are not, because through the years, as they understand, their thinking is that the Pope has ex cathedra. Speaking from the throne, he can add laws, change laws, and so on. So that's the way they view him. Go ahead, Ward. Yeah. And that's the case with many religions that have cropped up through the years. The Bible is not complete, and so we find the Pearl of Great Price, the Doctrine and Covenants, the Book of Mormon, Mary Baker Eddy's Key to the Scriptures, etc., etc., that, well, the Bible's not complete, so we have it completed now through these people. Of course, all of those doctrines that have come to, in Revelations, as they call it, that come to people in the last days, centuries, contradict each other. So something's wrong. Okay, Mary, go ahead. Well, or was it yesterday, maybe, Beth, we saw that the Muslims and some, what kind of church quote was that they were meeting together in? So they're getting in the ecumenical movement as well. Okay, anything else on number one? Oh, all right, sorry about that. Didn't see you over here. is the Bible or the Constitution the one that's doing the evolving, or is it the people in their mind? Okay, that's right. That's what's going on. There are strict constructionists. I think that's a term we hear used, those who think that the Constitution, as written by the founding fathers, there you go, thank you, is what it is. And it is not evolving. Okay, anything else? That's good comments. Number two, how does Jesus' presence at the wedding feast set him apart from John the Immerser? We didn't discuss this a lot when we were talking about John, but if you remember what kind of fellow he was and where he was, Kelly?
John was isolated, and he was not in the room. But here he was, socializing and celebrating something.
So Kelly points out, and that's what we're looking at, is that John was kind of a recluse in one sense, although people did come out and hear him, but he lived out there in the Judean wilderness by himself, neither cutting his hair or drinking wine, and not socializing, as it were, in the cities. Jesus did, and so there's a contrast between the two of them. Of course, what did the Pharisees, Kelly brought up, what did the Pharisees accuse Jesus of doing? Socializing with sinners and reprobates and so forth, and as if he was partaking in their sins. All right, anything else on number two? Number three says, how would Jesus' authority be established by the resurrection? Okay. Do we have a passage in this lesson that has anything to do with the resurrection of Christ? Mo, did you hand up? Yeah. Okay. So, Mo mentions the passage there in John, the second chapter. His disciples remembered that the zeal of his house would eat him up, consume me. That's John 2, verse 17. That's after he had cleansed the temple, chased the money changers and the merchants out of it. And his disciples remember that quotation in the Old Testament. Then that verse 18 of John 2, the Jews therefore answered and said, what sign do you show us, seeing that you do these things? Give us the authority, is one way to put it. Where do you get this authority to do these things? So he says, here it is, destroy this temple, in 3 days I'll raise it up. The Jews therefore said, it took 46 years to build the temple, and you'll raise it up in 3 days? But he was speaking the temple of his body. So that's where this question comes from. And I'll read it again, and we all know the answer now. How would Jesus' authority be established by the resurrection? They said, what authority do you do these things? He said, destroy the temple and it'll be raised back up. They didn't understand what he's talking about, but that doesn't deny the fact that he is saying he would be raised from the dead. That's by what authority I do these. If a fellow is raised from the dead, Somebody's got some authority, haven't they? So, and of course, in John the 11th chapter, he did raise Lazarus from the dead, and there's some other people as well. So, and as Mo went ahead and mentioned, I think it was him, that when Jesus ascended back to heaven and the disciples went out speaking, they preached the resurrection of Jesus. And Paul in 1 Corinthians 15, the first few verses, that's what he says, the gospel that he delivered to them. And it was verified, so to speak, in that Jesus was raised from the dead and he's no longer here. Okay, anything else on that one? Number four, how was Jesus consumed or eaten up by zeal for God's house? And we've kind of already answered that by reading that passage there. He was consumed by zeal for God's house. If you had seen, okay, all right, that's what I was going to ask. If you had been in the temple area when Jesus did that and you saw him, did he just kind of go through, all right, get out of here, you know, go on, you know. He was turning over tables. He used a scourge as a whip and so on, and rather zealous. And so that's why the disciples remembered that saying there in verse 17 of John 2, Psalm 69, verse 9, which is up there at the top of your page. Go ahead, Mo. I think we asked, and that's right, thank you, oh, that's right. But I think we mentioned last week, or asked last week, was Jesus angry when he did that? It was righteous anger. Righteous indignation is what we call it today, so that we won't get confused with anger that is not righteous. But anger within itself is not something that is evil or wrong. God became angry in the Old Testament with some people, didn't he? So, the anger or righteous indignation that Jesus exhibited there, he was consumed by that, and he cleansed the temple with that zeal. Go ahead, Mitch. Let me see if I can rephrase Mitch's question. If it was anger, was it violent behavior? Is that kind of what you asked? I think that's a good question, and it's kind of hard to answer, isn't it? In that righteous indignation or that anger that Jesus displayed, was he violent in it, with it? Okay. Okay, and you said yes. Namby-pamby against sin. I thought I saw another hand. Go ahead, Megan, and then Mary, and then I got to ask a question. Is that violence? I'll ask that question later. Mary?
Mm-hmm.
In Romans, Paul said, behold the goodness and the severity of God. Again, it's what do you define or think violence is. In Romans, the 13th chapter, God gives to the civil powers the right to take care of the evildoer by the sword. Now, if that's violence, then so be it. But when you obey what God said in whatever situation, and Jesus obeying God and throwing the people out of the temple, throwing over the tables and whipping them with a scourge or whatever he may have done, doesn't tell us that he hit any of them. But anyway, if that's violence, then it was what God wanted Jesus to do. But we have terms today like violence and other things that in our mind we don't get the same connotation maybe that we should. Megan mentioned not spoiling this kid by sparing the rod. Is that violence? Not in my mind, but it depends on our definition of it. You're abusing them, yes. Okay. Did I settle everything? Okay, good. Okay. All right. As Mary indicated, people today do not understand that the love of God demands that his justice also come into play. And I'm trying to think of Romans, the chapter there where it talks about the wages of sin is death. God would not be just if he didn't pay you for the sin that you commit. And the sin, the punishment for the sin that we commit is death. That's pretty violent, isn't it? So, that's where it is almost to grasp God and his being in his holiness and his justice, his mercy and his loving kindness. People, as Mary indicated, think that's contradictory. But God would not be God who God that he is without all of those characteristics, if you want to call them that, holiness, justice, mercy, et cetera, et cetera. Mo, go ahead. Well, they dismiss it too. Yeah. It's God, right. Is God long-suffering? God told Moses and the people in the Old Testament, or you go into the land, or don't, let me put it this way. He said, I'll not have those people in Canaan. The Amorites' iniquity is not yet full. And how many years was it? The only people got into the land, and finally he says, now you kill them all.
About 430 years.
Yeah. God was just in killing those people because of their wickedness. They said, well, you mean the children too? What if those children were allowed to grow up with those parents? What would they have been? But that's, you know, God didn't discuss that, but that's a question I always think about. And so he was just as well as merciful, at least to the children. He was just to those people who were wicked, and he was long-suffering until their wickedness became full. And is he doing that with nations today? Well, I wonder when his long suffering is going to play out, so to speak, when our iniquity here in this other country is full. Go ahead. Right. What she's saying is so that, is the New Testament important? No, by far it's important. But what went before it, God was laying the groundwork. I don't know if I heard this or somebody, I didn't think it up probably, that in the Old Testament, we have kindergarten. God's dealing with the people in kindergarten. And they finally get into the second grade and so on. God could not and did not deal with the people in the Old Testament as he expected them to be later when his full gospel was revealed. But anyway, the Old Testament is there to show us what God is like. As much more than perhaps in the New Testament, but when we see what God did in the Old Testament with His long suffering and His preparation of the people, was He behold the goodness and severity of God? Was He severe back there? But what did He provide for them? Blood, life. Here's He was teaching them with all those sacrifices back there. In the taking the life of those animals, he was teaching them, yes, but now they're no longer sacrifices every day. There is one who gave his life for us, shed his blood. I think every time you hear that phrase, shed his blood or the blood, think of life. The fruit of the vine represents his blood, but it's his life that he gave. Of course, the life is in the blood. But anyway, that's what God was doing during the Old Testament, is preparing the people for the coming of this one who would give his life for us. Was that merciful? We wouldn't have forgiveness of sins without it, and death would be our wages. Go ahead, Paul. Oh, yeah. Right, I'm glad you brought that up, because there were occasions when God, just like that, so to speak, brought the justice upon them. And there's that side of it, and what I was thinking of is as a general overview of the people as a whole, he was very long-suffering with them and provided the life of the animals to take care of it. But there are occasions where, just like that, he... Nadab and Abihu fell down dead. I mean, immediately. So that shows God's justice, right? And that right. That his whole household, yeah. I'll get Kay in just a second, but when Mo mentioned Ananias and Sapphira in Acts the fifth chapter, they lied to God, and both of them at separate times fell down dead at Peter's feet. Did that have to happen again? To teach the people that God does not tolerate that kind of sin? Probably should. But I don't recall again in the New Testament that God ever did that. Okay, and then Austin. Okay. Austin. Good question, Kelly. Paraphrase that passage of him to whom much is given, much is required. Austin's comment is good and well, and I want to add this thought. The temple area, the temple building itself had a holy and most holy place, right? Who could go in there? The high priest. Outside of that, the building of where the Holy and Holy was, Holy and Holy of Holies, there was a sacrificial place. Who could go in that? The priest. Didn't have to be a high priest. Outside of that was the court of the men, the Jews, the court of the women. Outside of that was the Gentile court. Where were these money changers and guys selling the sheep? Were they in the Holy of Holies? No. So in the temple area, and it's more than football fields big, that's where those guys were. But that ground was to be held as holy, so to speak, not just the temple, but it was not to be used for what they were using for. That's the best way to put it, I guess. All right, time's gone. I would like to continue this some more, but next week, by the way, if you need lesson number 6, that's number 5. Lesson number 6, hold your hand up and we'll be dismissed as I pass this out. Lesson 6. Anybody else, lesson 6? Got lesson 6?
I got lesson 6.
You got lesson 6. You got lesson 6 down that aisle? All right. You have it? Oh, okay.